Miss Winter's house lay between two slow rises in the darkness, almost hills that seemed to merge into each other and that revealed the presence of a valley and a house only at the last turn of the drive. The sky by now was blooming shades of purple, indigo, and gunpowder, and the house beneath it crouched long and low and very dark. Barred shutters blacked out the windows, and there was not a single sign of human habitation. Closed in upon itself, the place seemed to shun visitors. I rang the bell. Its clang was oddly muted in the damp air. While I waited, I watched the sky. Cold crept through the soles of my shoes, and I rang the bell again. Still no one came to the door. About to ring for a third time, I was caught by surprise, when with no sound at all the door was opened. The woman in the doorway smiled professionally and apologized for keeping me waiting. At first sight, she seemed very ordinary. Her short, neat hair was the same palish shade as her skin, and her eyes were neither blue nor grey nor green. Yet it was less the absence of colour than a lack of expression that made her plain. "Good evening," I said. "I am Margaret Lee." "The biographer. We've been expecting you." She ushered me in and closed the door behind me. The key turned in the lock without a sound, and there was not a squeak as the well-oiled bolts were slid noiselessly into place. Standing there in my coat in the hallway, I experienced for the first time the most profound oddity of the place. Miss Winter's house was entirely silent. The woman told me her name was Judith, that she was the housekeeper. She asked about my journey and mentioned the hours of meals and the best times to get hot water. Her mouth opened and closed. As soon as her words fell from her lips, they were smothered by the blanket of silence that descended and extinguished them. The same silence swallowed our footfalls and muffled the opening and closing of doors, as she showed me one after another, the dining room, the drawing room, the music room. There was no magic behind the silence. It was the soft furnishings that did it. Overstuffed sofas were piled with velvet cushions. There were upholstered footstools, chaise longues and armchairs. Tapestries hung on the walls and were used as throws over upholstered furniture. Every floor was carpeted, every carpet overlaid with rugs. The damask that draped the windows also baffled the walls. Just as blotting paper absorbs ink, so all this wool and velvet absorbs sound, with one difference. Where blotting paper takes up only excess ink, the fabric of the house seemed to suck in the very essence of the words themselves. I followed the housekeeper. We turned left and right and right and left, went up and down stairs until I was thoroughly confused. Finally, we turned from a half landing and came to a halt. She unlocked a door that opened into a sitting room. There were three more doors leading off it. "Bathroom," she said, opening one of the doors. "Bedroom," opening another, and "study." The rooms were as padded with cushions and curtains and hangings as the rest of the house. "I'll bring you soup and sandwiches straight away, shall I? You must be hungry after the train. You've things to make your tea and coffee just here." She opened a cupboard in the corner of the bedroom to reveal a kettle, the other paraphernalia for drinks making, and even a tiny fridge, and then left me to my unpacking. In the bedroom, it was the work of a minute to unpack my few clothes, my books, and my toiletries. I pushed the tea and coffee things to one side and replaced them with the packet of cocoa I'd brought from home. Then I had just enough time to test the high, antique bed. It was so lavishly covered with cushions that there could be any number of peas under the mattress and I would not know it, before the housekeeper returned with a tray. "Miss Winter invites you to meet her in the library at 8 o'clock. She did her best to make it sound like an invitation, but I understood, as I was in no doubt meant to, that it was a command.